Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, a World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners. No prisoners. 1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Turner, author of the Turner's Take Newsletter. Also broker here at Daniels Trading, which is a Stone X company. We work with farmers, hedgers, end users, speculators, online traders, broker-assisted, managed futures. We do cash programs and consulting. If you have any questions about what we do here, please feel free to contact me. My number is 800-958-9470. If you're a client and you like what you hear on some of these positions or ideas on the markets, give me a call, shoot me a text. If you like the podcast, please give us a positive review. Turner's Take is on iTunes, and send it along to anyone you might want it. You can also check out the newsletter. Go to turnerstake.com, or you can text 33777 with the message Turner, and we'll be able to see get Turner's Take that way too. Finally, I'm just gonna remind everyone you can always give me a call. My contact information is in the show notes. My email address here is cturner@danielstrading.com, and you can find really everything on the website. So let's get into it. I'm going to go. There is a special election in Georgia tonight for control of the Senate. They expect to maybe take a day to figure out who won. It's going to be close. There's some speculation in there. It's going to affect the market. I mean, it could affect the stock markets and the macro markets. I don't know if it's going to have a big impact on the grain markets. We'll see if there is any kind of big shift in market sentiment. It'll probably be short-lived, but something to always keep in mind, right, whenever you have some kind of big political possibility or change that can come about. That is really it for right now on the macro landscape. It is a new year, so we are seeing volume and traders come back into the market, so that is nice. It was a little thin, except for the grain markets towards the end of the year. The grain markets can get pushed around, especially soybeans on lower volume going here. And, you know, the reason being is we're not going to see as many, there's not as many sellers left of grain, of especially soybeans going forward. Like, you know, like farmers would naturally be a seller of soybeans, but a lot of farmers sold soybeans at harvest and stored corn. Prices were so good for South America. Even when when soybeans was $8, $9, and $10, you know, they were a couple of dollars higher in Brazil, or the equivalent, because of their local currency was so weak. So they were selling so much soybeans. I mean, they got way ahead of themselves, 40, 50, 60% sold when they're normally only like 20 or 30% sold. And we talked about this in September and October. So the point is, now that we're in January and there are end users that need soybeans, there is the inflation trade coming in, there's the spec money coming in, there's farmers trying to buy back their crop or, you know, in sales, there's just not a whole lot of natural sellers in the market. So you can go up 40 to 50 cents like we did today on, I wouldn't say low volume, but it doesn't have to be super strong volume to get up there. And what's going to happen here is when soybeans do trade, you know, if you look at the charts, you'll get a monthly chart or a weekly chart the past 10 or 15 years, those times when soybeans traded in 12 to 15 and a half, you can get 30 to 40 cent days up and down. And it doesn't mean there has to be a lot of news. I got a lot of calls today say, hey, what happened in soybeans? Well, if a lot of, you know, it doesn't have to be a lot of people. If there's just a good solid buying interest in the soybean market, there just might not be anyone in the market to sell or wants to sell, or not a whole lot of resting orders to sell soybeans at these prices because they just don't have it. And it's only the spec, it's really only the spec seller. And I don't think the spec seller might be taking short-term shots in the market. I don't know anyone who wants to get heavy short here, right? Unless they already have the product. So that can help explain some of the price action today, and also what's going to happen with the price action going forward. So I put out a newsletter yesterday saying, to take a look at the charts. It might be time to take some profits. We haven't unloaded everything, but we have been selling some as we go up here now, because when I look at the price patterns, we're starting to get little reversals on the chart. We're starting to see pockets of where the market can go up and down and, and really trade through nickels and dimes and not a whole lot of volume. And that to me just means it's time to, we've been long for a while, take a little off the table, look for the next pullback. We'll get a pullback. I mean, when you get markets like this where they can go up and down so fast and the news is limited and the volume's just average at best, you can, that can happen. And that's, where I'll, how we'll trade between, let's say, $12 and with a possibility of, let's say, in the 15s. And I'm using that number because when we've been above 12 in the past, we typically have this $12 to $15.50 range. Does it have to be like that this time? No. Past performance is not indicative, right, of present or future results. We've all heard that before, and the charts are no different. But, that is, you gotta have to have some kind of expectations or, guidelines to use. And that's where the way we're looking at the soybean market right now. And if we're at 13.50, maybe there is $1.50 to $2 of upside looking back on those charts, and maybe $1.50 of downside. And so you say to yourself, we are kind of in the middle, and we're also early in the game, right? We've got to get to not just through South America now. We've got to get through the U.S. growing season now, right? And it's only January 5th, and we can see a really quite volatile soybean market between now and the 4th of July. And I'm going to go through this. I actually think we're going to have 18 months of this for the most part in soybeans. And I'll go through that in a little bit, and I'll post my supply and demand tables. But I did go to the supply and demand table. One interesting thing I did read today before I get to supply and demand tables and where we end the WASDE next week is there was an exchange. There was a news story in one of the, in a couple of the newsletters that we read and wires that we get, that was talking about an exchange for physical at the exchange, or an exchange for and what that means is, and it was something like 14,000 contracts of soybeans. Let me bring up the report real quick. 14,000 contracts of soybeans is a big number. It's about 2 million metric tons. Let me just see if I can find that story here. And so basically, what it really means is someone using maybe the OTC market or working with an elevator or a cash buyer, basically did this exchange for related positions, which could be based on futures for delivery in the future, or it could be OTC on futures when you have swaps for futures, or it could be OTC options for options. So the three main things on how it works. What it means is anyone, the only person who would come in and buy 14,000 contracts of new crop soybeans was most likely China. And if that's the case, then they're booking about, I don't know, 2 million metric tons of soybeans through the futures market. So that was and that happened Monday. That was a very interesting development. So it's something that we see exchange for physical, when we're working with the OTC market, when we're working with elevators, and you do see that you will see an exchange for physical between the futures and the physical product, at a delivery point. So that was very interesting. What that really means for China, if they're going to actually take, now, are they going to take the futures from the exchange? I bet what they end up doing is, if it were me, and I'm just guesstimating here, but if it were me, China goes ahead, you get some kind of swap that converts to futures through a big bank. You take the futures on the exchange, and then when you're ready to exchange for physical, you do that through one of the big dealers, like a, like an FC Stone or a StoneX, or like an ADM or a Cargill, and you do the exchange for physical. physical. So you finance it through the banks, you exchange it through the, you do it through the exchange for the futures, and then you eventually do it in the cash market on the exchange for physical. That's how I bet it goes, but it is very interesting that they had to be kind of creative like that and do it that way. So we'll see what that means. But if that was a little confusing for everyone, you know, that's on me. I probably didn't explain it as well as I probably could have, but we've I don't think we've ever talked about that process on the podcast before. So anyways, let's get to the balance sheets here. I'm going to start off with corn. So we're making some assumptions here for old crop where we will see an increase in exports. Ethanol kind of stays the same. Maybe the yields come down just a little bit. So if I'm thinking 91 planted, this is for old crop now, which is not going to change much. Maybe yields are 175, so just come down a little bit. Exports go up to about 2.7, 2.75 billion. And all of a sudden, I'm getting an ending stock of 1.4 and change, 1.4 billion and change, and we were at 1.7. So we're down 1.5, and that's really not now. And that might be not aggressive enough because what I'm not factoring in here is how much crop the USDA may reduce in South America, particularly Argentina. If they get aggressive with writing down those crops, then our exports can go higher, maybe 2.8 or 2.8.5 billion, and all of a sudden ending stocks are closer to 1.3 billion, which would really justify, you know, corn then making the run that it's been to around $5 here, right? If that's what if that's where we really are. But I think it's going to be close. I do think we're going to be somewhere between 1.3 and 1.5 billion. That my carryout has is a 1.43 billion. That's a 9.5% stock to usage, and that what that really means is corn deserves to be above four, deserves to be the mid fours, maybe even the high fours, depending on what the other markets are doing and what the outlook is, which is turns us next to new crop. So, a lot when you add up corn, soybeans, and wheat, we did some stuff at the November and December here with our corn, corn, soybean, and wheat outlooks on acreage, right? Because acreage is going to be a concern. We're going to have a big fight for acreage. There was issues in the wheat market, issues in the soybean market, issues in the corn market. There's only so many acres to go around. It's not like you just have a, you know, if you have an issue in a crop and it's just one, right? Let's say it's just soybeans. You know, soybeans go sky high and corn and wheat are kind of low. Well, you can take some acres from corn and wheat and they'll shift over naturally. But if but there are three different stories going on in all the markets. So, you know, wheat's going to have 46 to 47 million acres, and that's already spoken for. That winter wheat is probably, you know, that's done. There is going to be spring wheat, but the spring wheat won't vary that much. So you got to ask, so when we look at these, a really high number for corn plus soybeans plus wheat is 230 million acres in the United States. So let's say we're at 46. So 46 million acres on that winter wheat. That only gives us 184 million acres to work with. And if we do plant 230 million acres, I think it would be the second highest that I can remember, or especially the second highest in the past 20 or 30 years, and probably the second highest in a long, long time. So we're 184 divided by 2. That means 90. If corn and soybeans were going to split acres, that's 92 million acres each. So that's what I did my spreadsheets with. All right. Now we keep in mind when we're adding on acres here, some of them could be double crop wheat for soybeans, so we'd have a little bit lower yielding soybean if more of that was going on. Also, as we expand into let's you know into other parts of the country that don't traditionally grow soybeans and corn, or you know, at least not as well as let's say Iowa or Illinois does. Now, the yields aren't going to be as great as other parts of the country, right? We're getting to more marginal ground. So a trend line yield in corn right now is 180 and a half. That's what the Ag Forum should say, about 180 and a half. Now 180 and a half is tough to get to begin with. Two, it's even harder to get to when you're keeping with the acres you're adding on aren't your top performing ones, right? Like for all the if you do add on some a million or 2 acres here, it's not the premium ground you're adding to, right? It could be good ground, or it could be maybe a little bit less than average, but the price is just, you know, pencil, right, for that ground. But at 92 million acres and a 180 and a half yield, bringing in a beginning stocks I have at 1.4 billion, my ending stocks are only at 1.6 billion next year. So this is new crop. So this is for Dees 21. 92 million acres, we're splitting down the middle with soybeans of what's available to get probably our second highest total corn plus wheat plus soybeans in the United States, or at least since I've been doing this. And then to, so our best case scenario is ending stocks 1.6, 1.7 billion, 1.6 billion, and that's hoping for a 180 yield or a 181 yield, right? There's a lot that can go on. One, we can see continued demand for corn. There can be a lot more issues in South America. We could have issues this summer. It's dry in the United States. We could have our own weather issues. So if we're just starting off at a 1.5, 1.6, 1.7, you continue to have rallies in the new crop and in the old crop. So the whole point of that, and when you look at this table, is it's this is not just a one crop year, old crop story. This is going to be an old crop story. This will be a new crop story. And then we're going to have to plant a whole bunch of acres again to eventually get to adequate stocks, right? So this is that's why I was saying earlier in the podcast, we could have not just a 6 month, you know, high prices. We could have 18 months of high prices or 12 months of high prices, but certainly a lot more, and a lot more than just, you know, the next couple of months here. When we apply, so that's one thing. And when you check out the table, it's 92 million acres. We're assuming a trend line yield of 180 and a half. Some pretty straightforward supply and demand that we got from the U.S. baseline, you know, their 10-year baseline, and tweaked it just a little bit, but not a lot. I mean, it's going to be close to what the USDA says to get those numbers. So I'm pretty confident in that 1.6 billion, 1.4 billion for this year, 1.6 billion for next year. That's no room for error, and that keeps prices high and the weather rallies interesting, to say the least. So that's for corn, all right? So what does that mean for prices? I think corn has an upside of 525 to 550 in the old crop. I think new crop can keep on rallying. We already passed my expectations for this time this year. I thought we'd top out like around 460, 465. I mean, we're almost at $5 today. The South American weather keeps on getting worse. Argentina is not exporting corn. By the way, Argentina not exporting corn to March 1st is not an old crop issue. Argentina not exporting corn until March 1st is their way of saying we can't let any more go because we need as much carry-in for the new crop so we can last until next year. That's what this is all about. It's about conserving what they have for the next 6 to 8 weeks, not letting any of it go, so they can add that to the new crop production so they can get through their next marketing year. They're definitely not going to plant some acres. Argentina will not plant all their acres. It is too dry, and the window is really the window is getting very tight. Maybe a week or two more, they can either plant what needs to be planted, and even then, it's not in great conditions and it's too dry. So, if the government, you know, the government, it's the one nice thing about the USDA is, say what you will about them, they are pretty transparent, at least what they're thinking. I know some people think they're wrong, or you know, maybe you know, the process isn't always so great, and it is a big government agency, so it will lag behind the market, but you know, eventually you get to exactly where they think the market is. We don't Argentina and the exchange does a nice job of releasing numbers, but if clearly there are people within that industry, or not within the government, that probably see the writing on the wall on a lower production for Argentina, and that's why we're seeing this export ban. They're not concerned about running out of corn between now and March 1st. They're concerned about running out of corn between now and next March. All right. So again, supportive for the corn market. As far as soybeans go, did the same thing. Okay, let's go to old crop first. One, we're going to have 83 million acres. I've got the yield coming down a smidge, 50 and a half. You know, we have been coming down a little bit. Small crop gets smaller, large crop gets larger. So just a little bit. I think that's like 2/10 of a yield bushel on that. I've got the crush staying strong. I think the USDA had it at 2.2 almost 2.2 billion. I did have the crush come down a little bit to 2.18 billion. It's like 15 million bushels. It's really not a lot, but it's just because exports are so strong. I think at some point, we're going to, because both vegetable oil and meal are going to be in such high demand, I think we're going to see a situation. Usually the crush in the United States wins out over exports. But in the years where that's happened, I look back, you know, from 2012, 13, 14, we didn't have I don't think we had a shortage in vegetable oil. So it was really a meal driven market. This is both. This is interesting this year. Vegetable oil, I can even make the case, is even stronger than the meal component, which is why, you know, when you think about the vegetable oil part of this, I think we will see exports eventually win out a little bit over the crush. Anyways, long story short, yeah, the exports I have in is about 2.25. So I'm raising exports, not by a lot. And, you know, and I came down the crush a little bit, and we reduced the yield a little bit in South America at the moment. I'm just assuming maybe Brazil has a little bit better production to help balance out what Argentina does not do. But my ending stocks are 124. Stock to usage is under 3%. And that justifies $13 and $14 soybeans and, you know, $15 on the weather rallies in the United States here. So I think going back to the earlier discussion, you know, on how soybeans can move, you really need to be ready for anything. You need to be ready for a dollar down over three sessions. We're up a dollar in five sessions here. We went from basically 1250 to 1350 in five sessions. We can easily come back down. In the years where we've traded in the teens and soybeans, we've seen that kind of action. Also, between 2007 and 2013, I want to say for every January WASDE report, almost every single one of the major grain markets were limit up or limit down after that January WASDE report. I think that stopped in 2014. But between 2007 and 2013, it was either every January report or all but one. Either wheat, corn, or soybeans were limit up or limit down afterwards. And it's because stocks were so tight. And stocks are getting so tight in soybeans, and they're getting tighter in corn and also wheat. This could be the year. This could be a year where we do see a limit up or a limit down move after a WASDE. And I got to tell you, sometimes the USDA really throws you a curveball. And the risk on the USDA curveball probably isn't to the upside. The risk on the potential USDA curveball is probably to the downside. So if you are long, whether you're a farmer and you're long with the physical grain, or you're long the futures, your spec or hedger, buybacks are just straight long spec, I would be looking into this, probably some short-term puts, if I'm long, into that WASDE report. I think it's kind of insane to just be long futures, unless you're not using any leverage. I mean, if you're, which is another thing, the expect margins to go up on soybeans. Limit on soybeans is 70 cents. That's $3,500 per contract. Right now, the margin's about 2,500, so 50 cents. We had a 50 cent trading range yesterday, and we had a larger than 50 cent trading range today, meaning that you could be properly margined at the beginning of the move and then not, and then debit at some point if you're on the wrong side of it. That can happen. The exchanges don't like it. The brokerage houses don't like it. The clearing firms don't like it. Honestly, clients and customers and traders don't like, you know, they always say they want more leverage, but it causes problems in terms of stops and wires and buying puts, and it can be a mess. So guys get in way over their skis. I'd expect the soybean margins to increase. And if I'm long or short heading into this WASDE report, I'm looking at short-term options. You can't use stops because stops can get jumped. You can have a stop 10, 15 cent below the market in soybeans. We open up 30 lower after the report. Your stop never gets hit. You got to use a put. You got to use a call if you're short. So keep that in mind. If you're a client of mine and you are long, if you are in futures, you'll be You've already started to get calls from me, and if you haven't yet, it's coming probably tomorrow. And so for new crop soybeans, so we just talked about old crop soybeans. It's bullish. I can argue 14 and 15 bucks on soybeans just based on my old crop kind of projections here. Again, don't know what the USDA is going to say. Stranger things have happened. For new crop, trend line yield's going to be about 50 and a half. All right. When the ag form comes out, I'm expecting a 50 and a half yield. We're very close to it. Let's say we have 92 million acres, right? Because, from a lot of people I talk to, corn is just as attractive as planting soybeans. So I'm just going to go half and half here. 92 million acres soybeans, till I'm proven wrong. And I've got a yield of 50 and a half trend line. You have a carry-in of about 124, 125, is which I have. At a record acres of soybeans and the highest trend line yield that we've had, we're only going to have an ending stocks of 220 million, have a stocks usage of under 5%. And that's for next year, not this year. That's best case scenario for next year. And that's really not taking into account any further losses in South America, which certainly can happen. And the early yields coming out don't look great for South America. So when I say this could be an 18-month story, not only is old crop going to be tight, but most likely new crop is going to be very tight. And when I see those stories, like the CBOT reported, there was a EFR, the Exchange for Related Positions, which we talked about in the beginning, of 14,000 contracts of new crop soybeans. They probably have a guy just like me, and this is not, I mean, this is not hard to do. I don't want to say this is rocket science or something like that. Going through these tables, just doing plug and chug, making some very conservative estimates that are not out of this world at all. Actually, they're pretty vanilla, and coming up with an ending stocks next year of 200 million best case scenario, right? And they know that. And soybeans are only at 11. So if soybeans are at 11, and we're dealing with a 200 million carryout next year at best, and odds are it's going low, we're going to see price rationing again next year. Man, I'd be buying 14. If I was China, I'd be buying 14,000 contracts of new crop beans too. So, when you look at it this way, from the balance sheet tables and the estimates, and when you keep in mind that there's not a lot of natural sellers in the market right now, meaning farmers. That's the commercials that are short bought, that there is a need on the export market to buy this stuff, that the futures market can really kind of gap in these when there's a lot of buying and not the natural sellers. And also keep in mind too, there when I'm talking about the supply and demand tables for new crop, they haven't been published yet. They don't get published till May. The USDA does not put out new crop supply and demand until May. So we've got five more WASDEs till that happen. But guys like me and traders and banks and cash grain dealers, nations that have buying programs like China, all have this kind of analytics, and they're basing their decisions on expectations on stock to use year over year and what's going to be available. And from there, stock to use, if it's going to be tight, there is a certain, based on stock to usage, there's a certain expectation of where prices should be. So when I was saying a couple of months ago and last month and a couple of weeks ago that if we're going to be, sub 200 on the stock, sub 200 bushels on the ending stocks, our stock to usage is going to be under 4%. It's like 3.5 or 4%. You look back in prior years when we've been at 3.5 or 4% stock to usage or lower, where have soybeans been? It's been beans in the teens. And I've been quoted on that in various news sources and newsletters on that. And the reason why you can have the confidence to even say something like that, because no one wants to be the guy who says 200 crude oil and then it doesn't come close and looks like an idiot, right? I think, but the reason you can have the confidence, or I can have the confidence, or anyone else out there who does this can have the confidence that, yeah, beans and the teens in reality is when you see these projections. Now, why don't we immediately trade to 13 when we were at 11? Or if I'm talking about $15 now, why don't we immediately trade there? Why might it take some time? One, it's the weather and the production. But two, it's who needs it. If the commercials need it, they don't need it now. They may wait and see. right? They're short bought. They don't need to come in and buy beans today on Jan 5th on maybe something they need in April, right? Maybe. And it does pay to wait a little bit, most likely, probably because what if you get 94 million acres soybeans and 90 million corn instead of 92, 92? I mean, it keeps corn high, but it certainly helps with the soybean market. Anyways, there are reasons to why it does take time. Now, what's interesting about the market now is not only do we have just the traditional players in the market, but we are seeing the inflation trade too. And we saw that happen in the late, 2008, 2009, 2010. There was inflation concerns, the subprime crisis, and the quantitative easing that came with it. So not only were the grain markets tight, we had the money flow. And while it might not be to the same extent as it was that time around, it still exists, and the inflation trade is on, just to a but to a lower degree. So that is where we are. We are going to head. So price range for soybeans, for me, for old crop, 12 to 15, 15 and a half. And I'm using those based on stock to usage possibilities and where we've been in the past when we've been in those stock to usage. When we've been at a 2%, 3%, 4% area of stock to usage, we have traded above 12, below 15 and a half. Does it mean that we get to 15? No. But that's where we've been in the past when we've been at these stock to usage levels. For corn, when we're at these stock to usage levels, we're well into the fours. If we should start thinking we're getting close to a billion, like 1.2 or 1.3, and stock to usage starts to get to 8% for corn, all of a sudden we're at 5, 525, 550, right? And that would be supportive also because if soybeans, let's say, should get to $14, divide that by 5, that's a 2.8 corn to soybean ratio. It's kind of high to soybeans, but it's not out of this world crazy. And those things can happen. So wheat also, we closed above 6. You got to think high 6s, $7 are in play because there are issues in Russia. There's going to be export taxes there. They're not going to be able to, they've had a big problem with their crop. There's been crops with the wheat, problems with the wheat crop around the world. United States is the last resort for wheat. Soybeans going higher, corn going higher. You know, if corn can go to 525, 550, if soybeans can go to 14, 15, then that means wheat can go to 7. So I still think bean oil goes to 45. And if we keep on going globally, vegetable oil is the most bullish of all these things. So I guess you can make the case if that, you know, if corn, soybeans, and wheat go the prices we're talking about, not only does bean oil go to 45, then it probably goes actually make. Deserves to make, or I shouldn't say deserves, you can make a very strong case that it could go to 50. Why, if I'm this bullish, why am I taking profits? I'm not taking all profits. I'm taking some profits. We've been long for a long time here. Whenever I've gotten greedy or I see the charts or I see this kind of like air pockets in the market, I've always thought it's probably time to take a little bit off the table. And then, because when you see those air pockets in the market, and the big report that we've coming on, I'd rather take profits now and buy some cheap, not cheap, everything's going to be expensive, but some short-dated calls heading into the report, and using any kind of, you get these corrections, 40, 30, 40, 50 cents in beans and 20 cents in corn, and you know what, when you see it, everyone thinks the move is over, and that'll be the time to maybe get back in or put back on what we took off. So those are my thoughts going in. If you're a client, you've probably heard from me by email, text, or phone. If not, you're going to hear from me tomorrow. And we'll probably take a little bit off and hope for a good time to get in, and but also keep some on, you know, just in case we just keep on trucking up here. But we are in some pretty lofty territories now. If you don't work with me or would like to know more about working with me, please give me a call. My number is 800-958-9470. Clients can call me at the office or my cell phone. And my email here is cturner@danielstrading.com. So that's going to be a wrap for this week. Hope everyone had a great new year. The WASD is Tuesday. Now, my projections for what I was just talking about doesn't mean it's going to be in the WASD. There, When the markets get like this, a lot of analysts and brokers and traders have two sets of numbers, where we think we'll be at the end of the year and where we think the WASI is going to say on the next report. So I'm expecting bullish. I wouldn't be surprised if some curveballs, like it could happen. They could not touch South America. They don't have to touch South American production, right? They don't have to increase demand yet. I think they will, and you never know what they find. I mean, this is the USDA here. So you just got to keep that in mind. And I will say this, and I want to leave this podcast with one last thought with everybody. 2007 to 2013, I want to say, with the exception of one of those years, the January WASI report produced a limit up or a limit down move. We are coming into a period now and next year too, where it reminds me of that time period. I'm not saying we could be limit up or limit down, but we have the recipe to have some big moves on major report days now with these tight stocks. Because when you change soybean stocks and we're tight, like 150, let's say we're at a 150 million carryout or a 120 million carryout or a 170 million carryout, and you change things by 30, 40, 50 million bushels, I mean, those could be dollar moves depending on how the market is positioned, right? When we were thinking we had a 3 billion carryout in corn, 200 million bushels was a nickel, a nickel move, right? But, I remember back in 2012, 13, a 15 million bushel move on a 120 million, when you got 120 million in ending stocks. Well, that was a limit down. That was a limit up day plus another 40 cents the next day. So just keep that in mind. We're heading into that kind of territory. Some people have seen this before, some haven't. If you need any help, you want to talk, give me a call. Good luck, everyone. I will be putting out some ideas for the WASDE report. First thing I got to do, though, is I got to take a little bit off the table here, and then we'll look at that towards the end of the week. So good luck to everyone. Hope everyone's having a good start to their new year, and I'll talk to you all soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniel's trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniel's Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.